Andy, you mentioned at the top of the programme that last Monday was International B-Day. We've had the Dawn Chorus. We should have perhaps had a live B-Day chorus as well.
Well, birds and the bees.
We're mentioning it. We are celebrating it.
Birds and the bees, equally important, and we're celebrating it today, if
yes,
you like.
We are.
Because thinking back to Michael's email there about exterminating mosquitoes.
Yeah,
and
just to remind
wasps,
people who've just listened to us back from the Brink Finish last Sunday, and we had an email from one of our listeners saying he very much enjoyed the programme, but is there an argument for preserving the likes, or could we make one for preserving the likes of mosquitoes and wasps, etc.?
Yeah, this goes back to a lack of understanding of the role of each species that has evolved to have a vital part to play in the stable ecosystem. And, you know, we have to be interested in the first place. And once this interest is awakened, then we can really want to conserve all our fellow species. But we have to actually be interested. And how do you get people interested in the first place? So in a moment, we're going to be hearing an interview I recorded earlier there with Aoife Nigil O'Cuadha, who is the owner of Galty Honey Farm and the co-founder of the Native Irish Honeybee Society.
Yeah.
Now, while she makes her living from honey and honeybees,
nonetheless, she has a vested interest, Aoife.
Well, she has a vested interest indeed, but I mean, to have such a successful honeybee farm of Native Irish honeybees, 170 hives, she must be doing something right. And she is, and she has the whole environment suitable for this. And if it's suitable for the honeybees, it's suitable for all the other co-fellow travellers that we have in that area as well, who are also pollinators, who also feed on nectar, who also want pollen and things like this. So it's wakening up the interest of people in the wildlife in the first place. If people were as interested as they should be, we wouldn't be having this pushing the stone up a hill trying to get people to conserve biodiversity. You know, when people say to you, you know, when did you get interested in wildlife? Oh, last week when Derek said he'd want me on the programme. You know, yeah. I mean, we should all be, we all are interested in wildlife to begin with as kids. It's just that we're told, stop touching that, don't be poking at that, and it's bad out of us. But, you know, we should conserve this interest that we have ourselves in wildlife. It's not something odd and a peculiar programme that's on late at night for vested interests. This is something that is of importance to everybody, and the more we're interested in it, then the more we want it to be there. So it was great to have this interview with Aoife, who was hugely enthusiastic about her native honeybees. Aoife, you're the owner of Galty Honey Farm and you're the co-founder of the Native Irish Honeybee Society. It's great to be talking to you. Now, you come from a long line of beekeepers. Your father was a beekeeper, his uncle was a beekeeper. It's been in the family for a very long time, has it not?
That's right, Aoife. Yeah. And actually, my father, his uncle's a beekeeper, but my father's father was a beekeeper as well, and his grandfather. So, yeah, it goes back further generations than that, but we can't, you know, trace the generations beyond that, you know.
So you, of course, then are very familiar and used to the tradition of telling the bees when somebody dies. Now, your mother, Joan,
yes,
I'm sorry to hear, died recently, but you informed the bees.
Thanks.
Of this. Tell us how you told the bees.
We did. So, yeah, oh, it was a very special event. Obviously, we were devastated when my mother passed, but the first thing my father said straight away, we need to go out and tell the bees. So he gathered us up and we went out to one of the hives, and you only have to tell one hive of bees, because those bees in that hive will go around to the other hives and tell the other bees. So the tradition is, like, this was carried out when his father died as well, and he remembers it, his uncle doing it, and the previous generation. So what you do is you bring a black cloth with you, preferably black crepe, but any black cloth will do. We had a black scarf belonged to my mother, and he draped it over the top of the hive. And then it's really important to bring some food and drink from the wake, and you put it on top of the black cloth as an offering to the bees. And you tell the bees then that the person has passed. And he had a lovely poem at the time. So you can just tell them, you don't have to recite a poem, but he had a lovely poem. It's called Telling the Bees. It's a very old Scottish poem, and he recited that. And it was lovely because it suited the situation so well, because in the poem, after every line, you know, he said, bees, bees murmuring low, bees, bees murmuring low. And it just really suited the occasion.
Yeah, we have a clip of this actually, Aoife, and we can have a listen to it.
wished little bees sad tidings I bear. Bees, bees, murmur and low, howled in her grave lies your mistress dear. Bees, bees, murmur and low, no more she'll ride to the sound of the horn, no more she'll fickle her sickle for corn, no more she'll come to your hive of a morn. Bees, bees, murmur and low. Look, honeybees.
Yeah, tradition is really very important to keep it going.
Yes.
You're in the Galtee Honey Farm and you have 170 hives of native Irish black honey bees, which is great.
That's right.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering, for the benefit of people, you know, we're talking about the native Irish black honey bee becoming endangered. And
yes,
sometimes people think this is just because of climate change and biodiversity lacking and all of that. But it's also because of the introduction of the buckfast bee, which is a different bee altogether. Can you explain why this
buckfast? That's right.
What's going on? I mean, people don't realise that it's not so much the Irish bees are becoming extinct because of all the environmental issues. There's this extra thing that we never talk about. Tell me about this.
Yeah, that's right. So unfortunately, the native Irish black honeybee, it's also called the dark European honeybee, and it was once native to all of Europe north of the Alps, you know, northern and northwestern Europe. It only exists in small pockets now in mainland Europe. It's virtually extinct in mainland Europe. Ireland has the largest populations in the world of this bee, this honeybee. And we know that from DNA research that has been carried out by LIT and NUIG. They did extensive surveys. And, you know, so it's great because we have something really special. We have a really special genetic resource here in Ireland. But the problem is it is under threat from importations, as you mentioned, of the buckfast honeybee. So this honeybee was created back in the kind of by Brother Adam from Buckfast Abbey, over 100 years ago now. But at the time, it was declared by him that the black bees of the British Isles had become extinct. There was a disease at the time called the Isle of Wight disease that wiped out huge populations of black bees in Britain and Ireland. But they weren't all wiped out, and thankfully, we know that now from the DNA evidence that we have. So, the importation of these buckfast bees, and they're actually being reared here in Ireland. When they mate with the native black honeybees, the next generation is a hybrid, and the genetics of our rare native black bee are lost then, you know, which is very unfortunate. A lot of beekeepers keep the native black honeybee because of its advantages in our Irish climate. So, you know, it evolved with our Irish summer weather. So, for example, if you had in the summertime, like we often do have in an Irish summer, we might have a week or two of beautiful warm weather where the bees can collect as much as they can. And then you might have another week or two of rain and they can't get out to collect nectar and pollen at all. So our native black honeybees have evolved to hold on to what they've collected and not eat through it. You know, they're very frugal with their stores and they'll survive on very little. So that's a really good advantage, you can imagine, in our Irish summers.
170 hives of bees is a queer amount of bees, and it was actually it was actually with yourselves down in the Galtee Bee Farm that our late Philip McCabe, Beard of the World of Bees, world record attempt way back. It was 2005. That's what I'm just trying to say. It's practically 20 years ago since it happened. Do you remember that, or can you tell us about it?
He was so brave.
So what happened? I mean, was this lined up for ages? Had you all loads of bees got in from extra places?
Give us
the background information. How did it all happen?
Okay. Yeah. Oh, it was, I mean, I still remember it like it was yesterday, because it was such a vivid, crazy, unusual event that it's something you'll never forget, you know. So I think they had it in the planning for about the, you know, for the year previous to that. And I remember at the time my father, Michal, so this area here is the base for Galtee Bee Breeding Group. It was the first conservation area for the native Irish black honeybee. And basically, we all got together to carry out this world record attempt with Philip, who was so brave at the time, because no one else would have done that, I don't think. I honestly don't think. But what we did was, the night before we to collect the bees, we went around to our colonies here in Galtee Honey Farm. So, you know, to collect the amount of bees, you would have to take, we took roughly 10,000 from each hive, and we did about, you know, about 20-30 hives. We selected our most docile colonies. That was really important, so that Philip would get as little stings as possible. So the thing with honeybees is they do not like being without their queen. So that was what they did. We collected them the night before and left them without their queen bee. And because of this, then the following morning, when Philip got up on the weighing scales on the white sheet to start the world record attempt, these bees had been queenless for many hours. And we just poured them at his feet. And we also had tied a queen bee in a cage around his neck, just in a little box. So once we poured the bees out, as soon as they got the smell of the queen bee around Philip's neck, they started swarming up his body. They basically thought that Philip was like one giant queen bee. And that's how we got them all over his body.
Yes, indeed. We have a clip of Philip McCabe and Dick Warner in 2005 talking about this whole event. Let's have a listen.
They're going to pour 500,000 bees onto me in aid of Bohor. We're promoting the Appamundia Congress that's taking place in August, the World Beekeeping Congress. And in order to do it, we thought we'd raise a few pounds for Bohor into the bargain. So today we have a load of people here, all dressed in bee suits, I hasten to add. These bees will pour the bees. I mean, the Galtee Bee Breeding Group, who are the local beekeeping group down here, they have bred bees, and they're now going to pour them onto me, onto my naked body. And if we pass 87.5 pound weight, it means I'm into the Guinness Book of Records, and that's what it's all about.
So, Philip, how many bees are we talking about?
Well, we're talking between 400,000 and 500,000.
And how do you count them?
Yeah, by weight. There's so many bees. There's 4,000 bees in a pound weight.
Now, you're mad into honeybees. What's the story on bumblebees? I had somebody asking me the other day, all you people with honeybees are taking the bite out of the mouths of the bumblebees, and the more honeybees there are, this is why we've no bumblebees. Mind you, they left with a flea in their ear after they told that to me, as if it was people with honeybees that were causing the demise of bumblebees.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with biodiversity change, But I mean, how are you? What do you?
Exactly.
Yeah, you have a bumblebee that's a friend of yours, I believe.
That's right. Yeah. So yeah. I mean, the honeybees, and again, as a beekeeper, you know, most beekeepers are extremely conscious of the other bees, the solitary bees and the bumblebees. And I can talk a little bit about that in a minute, if you like. But we had this beautiful bumblebee at one time. So, you know, we have 20 apiary sites where our 170 hives of bees are sited. So we would have like about 8 hives in each site, not too many. So that's number one, they're not competing with each other, but also they're not competing with bumblebees or solitary bees or other pollinators in the area, because beekeepers would be conscious of that. And again, you're completely right there. It's actually the reduction in biodiversity that is causing most of the problem with the decline of our pollinators. But there was this bumblebee. So like in around the apiaries and around where our honey farm is, there's lots of wild sites. That's so important for all pollinators. So you'll have lots of briars, clumps of briars in areas, and you'll have tufts of grass, and you'll have all sorts of things. So we do see bumblebee nests quite a bit, and they live side by side with the honeybee hives, which is great. But I had this 1 year when we were extracting the honey after harvesting it, every day at lunchtime when I'd come out of the honey house, there'd be a little bumblebee waiting for a little sup of nectar. So how it started was that she got into the honey house first on the first day, and I had to hunt the poor thing out. I just picked her up and put her outside. This was at lunchtime, and I gave her a little sup of nectar, and the following day when I came out for my lunch, there she was hovering around the door of the honey house again, waiting. So I got a little spoon, gave her a little sup of our own nectar, and she did that for a couple of weeks every day. And I was confident that I could give her her own nectar because it's our own honey. I can stand over its traceability, but I wouldn't recommend people buying honey off the shop shelf and feeding it to bumblebees at all, because, you know, generally what they can get in their environment is the healthiest for them, just in case you'd pass a disease onto them.
And you're dead sure it was the same bumblebee all the time, not a sister that came one day and another sister. Did they live for? I mean, how long do bumblebees live for, indeed?
Yeah. I think I'm fairly certain it was the same one, but you never know. Yeah,
of course it was.
She could have told her sisters. Yeah.
We were talking there earlier on about you know, conserving things and making things not be extinct and back from the brink and all of this. But it all really boils down to people having an interest in the world around them and trying to get people interested, because if you're not interested in what's going on, if you don't notice it, if you don't see it, how can you even get to the next step of preserving it, of conserving it, of making the environment suitable for the creatures you want to conserve? I mean, I'm listening to you there now and I can hear the bees all around you. So presumably where you're standing, there's lots and lots of bees that are actually going about their daily business, coming and going, because the habitat where you are has the requisite flowers and plants. Do you plant some, or are they all wild?
We do plant. We do plant bee plants in our garden and that. But like, what's out in the countryside is the most important thing for the honeybees and all pollinators. So again, it goes back to our biodiversity. You know, 95% of what they collect is the condition of the environment. Like the hedgerows are lifelines of the honeybees and the pollinators. And like, for example, with honeybees, their number one most important wildflower is from the briars. It's just the humble bramble, or the briars, the blackberry blossom. And if they don't have enough wild areas in the environment where the brambles are allowed to grow, for example, through the hedgerows and areas like that, you know, in also field margins, you know, that those areas, you know, they're not going to produce as much honey for themselves, and let alone for whoever's looking after them. That's secondary. It's to keep themselves alive is really important. But again, in saying that, you know, there are a lot of flowers and plants you can plant for pollinators, and you know, especially like there are hundreds of them. I have a whole chart of them, you know, that you can plant. And if you know, there's some wonderful books. There's a book called Plants for Bees, published by the International Bee Research
Association. Yes, indeed. And we have the whole National Pollinator Plan as well. But listen, tell me finally, what would you say to the people who want to be getting rid of this, that and the other? What would a world be like with no bees, no wasps, none of these pollinating insects? Can you imagine such a thing?
Yeah, it would. It would be a very different world, because a third of the food that we eat has had something to do with a bee. So, you know, we'd have a huge reduction in the amount of foods and the amount of choice we have, especially in countries where pollination is essential for, you know, like orange production and almond production. In California, they're in an awful lot of trouble at times because they're locked in to the whole pollination process economically so much. But as well, like, I just think that sometimes people think, oh, this means we should get a hive of bees to look after the bees. But It's something we don't encourage people to do unless they're going to do it the right way. For example, if you get the wrong type of honeybees, like buckfast bees, because you haven't done your research, you could be doing more harm than good for the native honeybee populations. Also, I suppose the honeybees are not in danger the same way that the bumblebees and solitary bees are, because they rely completely on their environment, because they live in the wild, so their habitats are those wild areas. So the best thing you can do for bees is to make your environment pollinator friendly as much as possible.
Well, you're a great advocate for bees, I have to say. I'm off to have some bread and honey now. In fact, even the owl and the pussycat. Like, do you remember the thing? The owl and the pussycat. The owl and the pussycat went to sea in a beautiful pea green boat. They brought some honey and plenty of money wrapped up in a £5 note.
£5 note. They had their priorities right.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed. Okay. Good to talk to you, Aoife.
Good to talk to you too, Aoife. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much indeed, Aoife and Aoife. Now we're joined in the studio by Terry Flanagan. It was a bit of a hazy day yesterday. Terence, I was working with you and you said you love the rain. You love it when it's like this.
Well, I don't love the rain per se, but I do think it's very good for us, because one of the things about the rain is that we see those lovely green colours here in Ireland. You know, when you go to Spain and it hasn't rained for weeks and weeks, maybe months and months, and everything is
brown.
Looks burnt. Yeah, you go out here this morning and you have a look. And you look at all those colours. May is the month of green and white. We see all those lovely white flowers, the elderberries, the chestnuts that are just finished, the cow parsleys, and then you have the greens. And you know what they say about Ireland? You've got the 40 shades of green. And
yes, certainly have. Yeah.
You've got really 40. At the moment, I'm looking at trees like lime trees, and they've got that beautiful colour, that really fresh green colour. And of course, as we go on into June and July and August, that will fade. I actually prefer May. May is my favourite month in the year, and that's the reason why. It's because of the colours. I know we've got all that fantastic bird song. We've got the dawn chorus as well. But what I really like is I like the colours. When you're out for a walk, I go down the canal and you can see, oh, it's just magic. The swans are on the canal at the moment, the ducks, they've got the ducklings there. But those colours, that's what brings it all home in May.
Now, we just heard a clip of the late Philip McCabe and indeed Dick Warner, my old boss and mate, and how sadly missed they are. You were there that day with Philip when he went for that world record breaking attempt.
Yeah, I'll never forget it, Derek. The reason why I remember it, first of all, is because it was my birthday. It was the 25th of June, 2005. And I went down with Angela and we spent the day down there watching this event and reporting on it. And it was an incredible event. First thing I did was I got suited up, booted and suited. And Philip was laughing at me, look, with this big gear on top of me. I was like the Michelin man. And he was there and he had nothing on. A pair of underpants he'd on. Okay, he had a pair of underpants on. He had a pair of earplugs in his ears. And he had a pair of nose plugs in his nose. And that was it. And they taped up this queen bee onto his chest. And then they started literally pouring all of these bees onto his body. He had a back brace to support him. Yeah. He reckoned, or he was hoping, that he would get 100 pounds of bees on his body. And it went on and on and on. The day, actually, Derek, was a bit like yesterday. It was a bit of a kind of a hazy day. It wasn't as warm as they had hoped to be. So things kind of slowed up in placing the bees on his body. And he got tired, and I think the bees may have got a bit agitated. Look, sadly, he didn't break the record, but it was a fantastic day and it was great to see him. And I remember at the very end when they were scooping all of the bees off him, and they were just taking them off in bucket loads. It was incredible to watch. And then he jumped off the scales. And I said to him, the first thing I said, did you get stung? And he said, I'm just after getting stung there now. I said, I must have frightened one of those bees. That was the only it was the only sting he got. And he, I don't know, 100,000 or 200,000 bees in his body.
Oh,
it was a great day.
Fantastic guy, Philip. He really was.
They're sadly missed.
Absolutely.
And Dick as well. Dick worked here on the programme. So Dick was a gentleman.
I was off that time, which is why Dick was sitting and presenting, because he was the original producer of Mooney Goes Wild. Anyway, let's move on with today, Terence.